Hey there, this is Alex with Gray Area. Welcome to our series Spotlight, where our mission is to build a bigger and more united house music community by sharing new and exciting artists, festivals, and event brands with you. In this interview, you'll hear from Quarter. She's a first-generation Puerto Rican and Portuguese queer artist who grew up destined to be a creative. She fell in love with dance music when she moved to Brooklyn after studying film at NYU and developed a style that blends breaks, techno, house, and ambient with a sultry sophistication. We'll talk about her parents being her strongest support system and how she fell in love with dance music, and also how her album Drenched was intended to open a window to her emotions and ended up holding a mirror for the state of the world. Be sure to like this video and subscribe for more interviews just like this.
So I'm going to hop right into it. First of all, thanks for taking the call today.
Thank you.
Sure, you're super busy, but it's awesome to get to talk to you. So your bio says you learned to DJ an hour before a gig in Portugal, and I went through every single one of your interviews and I'm fascinated by the fact that nobody's pulled on this thread before. Is this a true story, and can you share it?
So technically I knew how to DJ, but I had never used CDJs before. I had like a tiny little controller and I'd use Serato.
Right.
I'm half Portuguese. I have most of my family's in Portugal. And so I was visiting and I was like, let me just like ask around and see if I can get booked somewhere, even though I didn't have any of my gear.
Yeah.
And so I found this, what they call it, is like a micro discoteca, which is like just a baby room filled with speakers. Like I think at most like 40 people can fit in there and it's like tight.
Yeah.
And so it's called the living room and it's in an island called Madeira. Just anyway. So, they were like, yeah, come on a Saturday, like our best night. And you know, you're from Brooklyn. Like this is a big deal. Cause it's like this tiny Portuguese island. And I was like, oh shit. Like I've never used CDJs before. This is going to be really funny. so I like showed up, an hour early and I was like, yeah, so I have like USBs from America. I just want to make sure they work. And I just practiced for an hour and then like was winging it for the rest of the night. And it was fine. Like, luckily I knew how to beat match. It wasn't like I was syncing or anything, but it was just like learning brand new gear right before I had to play like all night.
That's kind of like, this attitude of like, I'm just going to go for it. Is that something that you've always carried with you? Because it takes a certain kind of person to show up at a club that they've never been to an hour before a gig and just be like, fuck it. I'm just going to figure it out. And I figured it out. And now I'm just going to do my thing. Like, is that how you kind of go about life?
I think yes and no. I feel like I have these moments where I suddenly have like intense like courage and bravery, and those moments like are usually pivotal for me in like gearing me into a new direction or a new chapter. Right. But I think for the most part, and I'm getting a lot better about it now, but I had like major imposter syndrome for a really long time, and then every now and then I'd get this burst of like exactly what you said, like fuck it, I'm just gonna do it. And yeah, like I think now I feel really confident in like DJing and producing, so I don't have the imposter syndrome so much. But yeah, it was not necessarily like just, yeah, I'm like so cool like that or anything like that.
When do you think it clicked for you? Like, when do you think that transference happened from like being, being like letting go of the imposter syndrome and just realizing that you're dope?
Honestly, it was when I started to notice like people that aren't just my friends being like, hey, like I believe in you. Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay. Like maybe this isn't, you know, like I believe my friends when they say kind things, of course, I don't think they're lying, but you can't help but feel like, okay, but you have to say that.
Right.
but yeah, I think it was like, I want to say it was when I released like my first EP in 2017. And it was around that time where people started like approaching me that I didn't know and being like, your DJ sets are sick, or like, I'm loving what you're producing. And it was like, oh, okay. Like, it's resonating with more people. I should probably start to believe in myself.
For sure. So you arrived in New York for film school. Were you considering a career in music then? Or did this just kind of like happen?
Yeah. So, okay. I've loved music my entire life. Right. When I was like, you know, like before I could even speak English correctly, I grew up knowing three languages. So I could, like, people didn't understand me growing up. I was like mixing them all up. Anyway, I was always like singing. I loved singing. I loved music. Every like birthday, Christmas, my mom and my dad would get me like instruments and things like that. And then in middle school, my dad got me my first like desktop computer.
Yeah.
And it had a bunch of like Sony Creative type software, and it had Sony Acid, which is like
I remember.
Yeah. And so I had like a PS2 USB microphone, and I'd like plug it into my computer, and I'd like sample like knocking on my desk and shit. And I would like make music in middle school, and I would bring CDs and like give it to friends. And then in high school, I got into GarageBand, but I never thought to like pursue that further than just like enjoying it.
Right.
And basically I'm a realist. Like, I'm really, really like pragmatic. And I think my dad, actually, I remember having a conversation with him while I was thinking about college and stuff. And he was like, you know, like a creative field where there's a lot of people. And I was like, what? He was like, film and TV, like credits are so long. Like, those are a lot of jobs.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, that's a good point. Like, it might be really easy to get a job like in film and TV. So many people work on them. But so that was like how it started. And I feel like I grew up doing everything, like anything creative I could do. I was the type of kid who was just like inside all the time for some reason. And so I would just like hole up in my room and make stuff, whether it was like songs or videos, whatever. And then I just so happened to go to film school. So that was just like something I did. And I worked in film for a really long time. I still dabble in film. Like, I'm trying to be a music editor right now for like film and TV, which is
that's
like
such a cool job.
Yeah. Like, I love film and TV, but it wasn't until like 2014 where I was like, hey, like that thing I used to do for fun, like producing music, I should like try to do it. Like, I should just like try to do it more. But yeah, so sorry, I went on a huge tangent.
That's okay. That's what this is about. That's totally what this is about. Like, I'm just going to be totally upfront with you. Like, when I interview somebody, I just want you to talk. Like, I just want to hear your story, and you're telling me the story, and I'm here for it, girl. I'm so here for it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I went to film school and did not think I was ever going to be a music producer, essentially. And then just started doing it again, totally for fun, DJing totally for fun. And then my best friend was in a band, and she was like, do you want to open for us? We're playing the Knitting Factory. Like, you want to be just like a little, like a warm-up DJ? And I was like, yeah. And it's funny, it was like a synth pop band. So I was playing like chill wave and like whatever. But that was my first gig. It was in 2015.
That's so cool. That's, yeah. I mean, you mentioned your dad, I know you have a close relationship with him, and I know he had a lot to do with your musical upbringing. Like, he listened to dance music a lot as you were a kid. How do you feel like that relationship and like his influence has made an impact on you?
Oh, huge. I mean, he got me that first computer. Yeah. Like, I feel like I don't know if he even realizes, like, I think he must know how much of an impact he's had on me, like as a creative person. I feel like my mom was super encouraging, and that was like, you know, she was so encouraging and so like, you're an artist, you need to be an artist one day, like you're a creative person, and always was telling me to embrace that. And then my dad like gave me the tools to be able to embrace it. Like he, you know, got me my first computer. He was the one who pushed me to go to NYU and move to New York. Like, even though I was really scared about student loans and everything, he was like, we're going to be paying a lot anyway. So might as well go to New York. Like, so yeah. And then growing up, he was just so like, I didn't live with my dad. My parents are separated. So he'd like pick me up on weekends. And he'd have like music blaring, like freestyle, just like pumping every time he'd pick me up. And I'd be like little, like 11-year-old me in the car, like, hell yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, it's a huge influence. And I think when I started DJing, he was like stoked on it. He was like, oh, that's so awesome. Like, you know, like that's so cool. And I remember like he moved to Florida a few years ago. And I went to go visit his like new place. And he was so excited to show me like this whole Sonos speaker system he had set up. And he's like, look, there's a speaker here, here, here. We can play them everywhere. And he like pulled up. I used to play on this pirate radio station called Wax FM.
Yeah.
And he like pulled up one of my sets and just started playing it without me even saying anything. And I was like, literally like almost in tears. I was like, Dad, like, you don't realize how supportive you are. Like, I don't know what that even means to me. But yeah, he's been a huge influence. And I don't know if he even knows, really.
I'm sure he does. I'm sure he does. My parents were equally supportive of every crazy creative thing that I wanted to do. So much so they put me and my brother in like a boys choir when we were like seven. They did all of the things awesome. For us just so we could continue doing the things that we like to do. So I totally like vibe with you on that. And it's so interesting to like talk to people who don't get that kind of support because I feel sad for them. Like, I feel like that just makes things infinitely harder for them to, because, you know, it's almost like they started a deficit because they don't know if they necessarily believe in that aspect of their personality.
Totally. I mean, yeah, I can't even imagine. I mean, I think I'd get into like computer science or something. I can't imagine a life without the support my parents were giving me, and like just so much so embracing that I'm a creative person and that I needed to follow some sort of creative path. Like if they pushed me to be like a doctor or something, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'd be fine, but I'd never know, but like,
right.
I'm just so happy that it didn't work out that way.
It's better this way.
Yeah.
So you came to New York and like, you kind of just put your nose to the grindstone and you worked really hard and you didn't look up until you finished school. And I kind of feel like from looking at your story, you didn't feel like you really became a New Yorker until after college was over. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about like that experience of like coming into your own New York and like starting to discover dance music, like in the scene?
Oh, totally. I mean, yeah, college, going to NYU was a trip. I feel like only people who go to college in like a big city where the campus is like in the middle of the city would be able to understand that experience. It's like you're in it, but you're a student and you're feeling like a tourist, but you're not because you're living there. And it's just like really weird. But once I was done with school, I moved to Brooklyn. Right. And I had always been curious about nightlife. I remember going to my first club actually when I was 16 in Portugal, because the drinking age there is 16, or was at least. And so, I don't know, maybe it's 18. I was drinking, I was 16, I don't know.
I think all of Europe is real loose about that. I went to Germany when I was 14 and they were like, go ahead, have a beer.
Exactly. So who knows what actually the rule was, but I went to a club. It was this insane, like open air, multi-room club thing. And I'm like 16, like, oh, this is fucking cool. Like, this is cool. And so I feel like that was like this little seed that got planted and then I forgot about it. And when I moved to Brooklyn, it was actually like, weirdly, Spotify has a big part in this story, but it's really? Because Spotify used to do this thing where they would like alert you when there was a show by like an artist that you follow,
right,
that's like nearby. And I mean, they still have that, but I think something about it in like 2013, it was like way more in your face, like, hey, you should go to this show, it's like near you. And I remember going to see Chrome Sparks at 285 Kent. And I was like, oh, like, this is cool. Like, this is something I need in my life. It was like that little seed that got planted when I was younger. Suddenly I was like, I need this all the time. And then I went to my first music festival. It was Bonnaroo in 2014 with my girlfriend at the time.
Yeah.
And there were a bunch of bands that I was really excited about. I remember Kanye West was playing, like there's like a lot. Frank Ocean played. It was like a really, really good lineup. And then something happened where essentially like somebody had an art car from Phoenix and Miha was there.
Yes.
She wasn't even billed. Like she wasn't a billed artist or anything. She had just come with the art car and they happened to play all night, even though like that wasn't scheduled.
Yeah.
And Skrillex happened to be there and he overheard like somebody's like playing at 5 a.m. Like I need to be there. So he shows up. There's like maybe a couple hundred of us that are there. And yeah. It was my first kind of like rave experience ever. Aside from that like club that I went to when I was 16, it just didn't really feel the same. So it was like sunrise is about to happen and we're all partying still.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is like everything I didn't know I needed. And now I'm hooked. And then immediately I came back from Bonnaroo and I was just like, I was going to as many like raves and club nights as I could. And like, yeah, the rest is history, I guess.
I love to hear that story because it's it's like so parallel to every raver's story. There's like that one night where it just clicked. And you're like, I don't ever, ever, ever want to stop doing this.
Yeah.
But you're a little bit different. You decided that you wanted to not just do it forever, but you wanted to like give that feeling back to people. Like
yeah.
You wanted to reciprocate that feeling of like giving people joy on the dance floor as an event promoter. Can you talk about that and like how you came to the realization that's something that you wanted to do?
Yeah. So that same year that I went to Bonnaroo with my girlfriend at the time, I met this girl who is now one of my best friends. Her name is Jenny. I met her on a work trip because she used to live in Pittsburgh. And I literally hung out with her a few times within like a span of a week. And I was like, oh, this girl's awesome. And I have to stay in touch. And she randomly happened to be moving to Brooklyn within the next year too. So I was like, this is perfect. We're going to become friends. So that was like a month before I went to Bonnaroo. And so I told my girlfriend at the time, I was like, you know what? We should just like pick up that girl from Pittsburgh and we should all go to a music festival together, even though I've only known her for a month and you've never met her before. And Amanda, girlfriend at the time, was like, yeah, absolutely. So we pick up Jenny and we went to Bonnaroo, and then Jenny ended up moving to the city like a few months later. So once Jenny moves, she's like basically on this mission to find like the best party. She's like, we need to go to the best party. And we're like going to all these different, you know, queer events and like just trying to get a taste for like all the nightlife that it felt like was being offered in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And we both agreed like it was fun and there was some good parties, but nothing felt like we couldn't find like our people, it felt like. And we were like, maybe we just don't know about the right parties yet or what, but we were just like, something's off. We like, what can we do? And so we were like, let's start our own. and so yeah, we like went to all these punk music venues and we're just like, can we throw a dance party here? And our first dance party was like at what is usually like a punk venue in their like back room. And it was just really fun. It was me and Jenny. There was this girl, Hazel, that we found to be another DJ. So it was like me and Hazel back to back all night, Jenny being like a boss promoter. And then my roommate and really, really close friend at the time, Angela, was doing like custom live like visualizations projected on a wall, like projection mapping stuff. And it was just like really sick. And we were like, we have to make this like a recurring thing. So we made it a monthly for a while. And yeah, it was like our whole mission was just like to let people get weird and be smiling. Like, I don't know how, like our whole thing was like, we want people smiling on the dance floor. We don't want people to feel like they need to be too cool. We don't like want everyone dressed in all black. We want people to be like goofy and enjoying themselves and whatever. And so, you know, like I remember Jenny used to work at Milk Bar and she would bring like entire cakes and just set it out with no utensils. And now after COVID, this sounds fucking disgusting, but we would just like grab chunks of the cake, like strangers, and just like eat the cake. It was so like, now in retrospect, it was weird, but it was really fun at the time. And yeah, our whole thing was like, we'd bring like disposable cameras and just like label them, and like we'd be like, property of Wave Cave, please return to like door person or something, and we just like leave them in the crowd and let people take pictures with them, and like hopefully people would actually return them, and they usually would. We'd do stuff like that. We just try to make it like more interactive, and yeah, it was really fun. And then we just kind of got busy, and then Wave Cave transformed into like a shared studio space. We like opened up a physical space and we were kind of focusing on that. And then we'd have one-off parties. And then it turned kind of into like a little record label. We like put out some of our friends' music. So it's sort of like evolving.
Do you see it still continuing to evolve post-pandemic? Cause I know you were still doing things like almost like what, like a month before everything shut down.
No, for sure. I mean, I think what happened really is like Jenny started a band. She's in a punk band called Neva.
Yeah.
And the quarter project just kind of started taking up so much of my time that, yeah, Wave Cave had to sort of like transform and evolve with us.
Right.
And we kind of like molded into whatever made sense at the time. So yeah, I have no intention of like, you know, killing off Wave Cave. I think it's one of those things that like, it's just going to keep, it's sort of this little brand we've created, and we've been versatile enough where I feel like it's going to keep being something in some capacity. Maybe we'll do a, you know, a series of parties again, who knows? Like, it's just kind of, we'll see what happens, I guess.
For sure. And speaking of the pandemic, at the beginning of the pandemic, you bravely released your album. Mm-hmm. That was written at a time of mental hardship for you. First I want to say it's like kind of fitting that it came out when it did, because it was like you giving this feeling of like, hey, I wrote this when I was having a tough time, and now everybody can listen to this while they're having a tough time. Can you talk about your experience writing that album, going through what you were going through?
Yeah. So it's, yeah, it is really crazy how it all panned out during the pandemic. But basically, yeah, I wrote it for, it took about a year to write everything. There were some songs that were kind of just sitting on the back burner that I opened back up and revisited and kind of reimagined. But yeah, it was about a year. And I was working a 9-to-5. But it wasn't a 9-to-5. It was like 10-hour shifts minimum, really, in an office with no windows.
Oh, I've been there.
So it was just like, I'm learning that sometimes, like, I think this is part of like the struggle, where you have these like two lives that are kind of like starting to collide, and it's all, things are just starting to get overwhelming. And so I had like a 9-to-5 and this like film gig, and got approached to write this album. And I was like, I have to do it. Like, I have to do this. And it's a small label, so they're not going to give me enough to like survive. I need to keep my job, but I still need to write my first album. And so I was just like not really, I was isolating myself a lot and the job was kind of stressful. And then I felt like I was just living a double life. Like it just felt, it was intense and like confusing. And I think I was just kind of dealing with my own like mental health stuff at the time. And in a weird way, it's like, even though the album added stress and added work, it was also like a release and a creative outlet. So it's just this weird kind of like tango I'm doing with like stress and like stress relief. And yeah, I mean, I think all my life I've sort of struggled with mental health and I didn't realize it until working on that album is like when I started to just like accept like, oh, I think I'm like sort of an anxious and depressed person. And I like let that come out in the album and I like kind of wanted to like live in it a little bit and allow myself to go there because I felt like I needed to just for like my own sort of evolution or whatever. And so yeah, that was like the journey in creating it. And so then when it dropped, literally like right at when things locked down, it was this weird thing where it was like, I wrote this album creating this whole like world in my head about like how things are so dystopian right now and it's difficult to be a human.
Yeah.
And then this awful thing happens to the entire world to remind us of that very fact.
Right.
and so yeah, it was just a really fucked up coincidence.
Yeah, absolutely.
but yeah, I was hoping, like my whole thing was like these songs really helped me to escape because I tried to kind of create worlds within them. And so hopefully in the very beginning of the lockdown and everything, it, you know, distracted some people for 30 minutes or however long.
Well, I mean, you know, it's good that I feel like people were hesitant to release music throughout the pandemic for whatever reasons. But I think, you know, not to say that there was like an advantage to releasing music. I don't want to like downplay how terrible what we all went through was and how terrible it was for the whole world and for all the people we'd lost. But I feel like it was such an important time for people to release music too.
Yeah.
Because people needed that. They needed something, you know, totally. Be it streaming and watching somebody be goofy on camera or like listening to something for half an hour so they could, you know, pretend like they weren't stuck in their house all day. So I have to like, you know, give a lot of respect to anybody that kept their shit going for the last year and a half, like you did. How do you feel coming out of things, having like, you know, released an album and continue doing what you were doing? How do you feel coming out of things? What are you looking forward to most on the other side of this?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to shout out my manager really quick because Alex was just so crucial to me staying productive. And not that anyone should have stayed productive. Like I understand a lot of people needed to just fucking check out.
Yeah.
Like, and I would have done that. Like I wanted to do that. But Alex was like, he could see that I was just coming out of a really tumultuous year prior to this mentally, right, emotionally. And he was like, we need to distract this girl because she was so excited about this album release. It's like the one thing she was looking forward to for a whole year prior. And now like all of this is happening. Like we need to make sure that she is fucking distracted and working. And he really motivated me to just like kind of try to keep grinding. And it was hard. Like I wasn't grinding every day. Like, honestly, it was like, I would be productive maybe a couple days every couple weeks, but that was still like huge.
Right.
And so I'm just so grateful to have had someone like that in my corner who was there to just be like, listen, I know this is tough. Trust me. you're going to be so stoked that you kept working though. And he was right. Cause I feel like I was able, I mean, all the streams, I was like streaming on Sophie Tucker's channel. I did like an Abracadabra stream recently, like Dirty Bird, Good TV. I just did like a virtual fest thing. And
I love them.
I know, me too. And it's just like, you know, LPGOB, I was doing like Femhouse Fridays. Like there are just like all these opportunities that I feel like now, like I'm just so grateful that I did them even on the days that I didn't feel like it.
Yeah.
Because A, I saw the way like the people in the chat and everything, like the people that watch those streams, like we were helping them so much. Like the communities within the streaming world, like it is so beautiful to see the way that they all stuck together and just like allowed themselves some joy the last year and a half. Like,
yeah.
I'm just so glad I got to be part of that. And I do feel like it allowed me to just expand my reach and make more friends and more people listening to my music. And I feel like now I'm starting to see like the benefit of having done all of those things. And I'm just so excited. I mean, I have an agent now, which is crazy to say out loud. And like, we're booking dates and I'm just like so stoked to be like out playing for people again. I'm playing my first like festival that I'm billed on properly in August. And like, yeah, I'm so stoked. Like it was really fucking hard.
Yeah.
And it was hard for everybody, you know, but I'm feeling really hopeful and excited about things for the first time in like 2 years, maybe three.
Yeah. Cause you came out of like what you were going through, we went straight into this, which is like remarkable, but I have to give props to your manager too. Because it's a delicate balance to play, in pushing your artist to be their best self and pushing them too hard, to where you're pushing them into the danger zone.
Totally.
And it sounds like your manager like rode that line really well.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And managed to like, you know, be a friend and a business partner at the same time.
Absolutely. Like, I mean, I think we'd only been working together for a year before March 2020. And I feel like the last year and a half, he's just like really proved himself as like not only just being like an amazing manager, but like such a good person. And yeah, he was like really solid. Definitely knew, like, and I think it's important that like, obviously communication is everything. And I was always really clear when I would be like, I gotta stop for a couple weeks. Like I can't, you know, and he respected that whenever I set boundaries. So yeah, it was good teamwork.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
One of the other things we had a lot of over the last year and a half were some long overdue conversations about representation in dance music. Mm-hmm. What did that mean to you? I know that you're not just queer, but you're mixed. So you're brown too. And you know, it's in there.
Yeah, inside.
Exactly. So like, what does it mean to you to see these conversations happening? And what does it mean to you to like be kind of a part of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's way overdue, like incredibly overdue. I think I would get really upset looking at a lot of lineups, seeing just a bunch of white guys, like straight white guys playing nonstop and playing over and over and over again. And it is so refreshing, even in just because New York is, you know, really making a fucking comeback right now. And so a lot of these lineups are being released and that I'm seeing parties that not a bunch of white guys, and it's amazing. And it's like queer people, you know, like black people, brown people. It's like people that are fucking talented and weren't getting shine that absolutely deserve to be getting shine. And so I just, yeah, it's really cool to see. And I feel like I've been going to a couple, I went to like a couple vaccination only events at, I went to Nowadays, they had a couple things going on, and I don't think I've ever seen such diverse and enthusiastic crowds. Like, it is so exciting what's happening right now. And yeah. I don't know that it would be like this if it weren't for everything that happened in 2020. Like, I think in a weird way, that was like one of the only positives, was that maybe we're inching toward something that makes more sense and is more equitable.
Completely agree. I'm kind of getting chills just thinking about that right now. It is really beautiful to see like diversity and equity not just being something people talk about, but something everybody is practicing.
Yeah.
Actively. And, you know, and not having to make it about that in the promotion. It's just a thing that's happening. And you notice it while you're there, but you don't have to be like, this all female lineup, or this all queer lineup, or this is a lineup for Black people. Like, it's just a thing that's happening. And like, that's the way it should have been all along.
Exactly. Yeah. 100%. And I'm seeing it, and there's definitely still, you know, like, there's the business techno lineups that are yes. all white dudes, and but we're not going to those parties anyway. So
no, right? I feel that. I feel you on that. There's so much other talent. There's so much other talent, especially if you live in a major city.
Like, exactly.
You know,
like, there's no reason to spend money to see a bunch of the same people play the same music.
No, exactly. I've already seen those guys before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's going to be the same thing. I want to hear some new shit.
Right.
So what I have an either or question for you. So what's cooler, being a cat mom of a viral kitty or DJing your first set post pandemic to a sweaty room of dancers unmasked and happy?
Oh, that's hard. What's cooler?
Yes.
Shit. I think DJing to a bunch of sweaty people feels cooler. Yeah.
All right. I can dig it.
Going viral is kind of weird, but the cat is amazing.
Yes. I love that video.
Yeah. No, it's so do I. It's funny because I remember when I posted it, it was the morning of, I was opening for Tyga on the Elsewhere roof in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm just going to post this video. I was like, it's going to get like 300 likes. I already know it. It's going to go off.
Yeah.
It's like in my head, like, it's going to get a couple hundred likes. It's going to be viral.
Right.
And I was like at Elsewhere waiting for my set to start. And I think I was in the green room or something. I like looked at my phone and I was just like getting all these notifications. And I was like, oh, this is like psychotic. What's going on? I had to turn off notifications like entirely because my phone was like freezing up because so much was happening. And then, yeah, the thing about going viral to that extent where you're getting like 500,000 likes and like millions and millions of views is that like the post goes through like these sort of like
waves
of virality. And so you'll have that like initial crazy bit. And then in a couple months, suddenly it's an influx of like more people that found it. And then some meme account posts it. And now like, it is totally insane. And then it got to a point where like Mixmag is posting it. Like, you know, like all these like, publications that I follow, I'm like scrolling through my feed and I'm like, oh, that's my cat. What's going on?
Is it weird to see like a publication that you wanted to be featured in feature your cat before you?
Well, thankfully, I feel like for the most part, people have been good about crediting Ambient Kitty or me.
Yeah.
And I actually, there are a lot of people have reached out to me and they're like, I discovered your music through your cat.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, it's like a win-win. Yeah. Like there's no losing here. There's no downside. Like if there's any reason to go viral, this was probably the best way.
Hey, you didn't say anything offensive.
Exactly.
You didn't piss anybody off. You just added a cat to the timeline.
Yeah,
right? And like, let's be honest, we could all use more cats on the timeline.
Exactly. No, exactly. And her music, her little music in that video is pure magic. So.
It is.
Yeah.
So my last question is always the same with everybody. But it's one of my favorite questions. What excites you about the future of dance music?
Ooh, well, we kind of were talking about it.
Yeah.
Just how people are getting shine that should have been. I think right now, in terms of like sonically and like genre, I think I just have a feeling that something big is happening. Like, we all had just a year and a half to like simmer, and I think we're all getting a lot of, and I, when I say we're all, I'm kind of speaking like on behalf of at least producers that I know, and I feel like we're all just like not afraid to get out of our comfort zones right now.
Oh, for sure.
Musically. And so I just feel like I'm really excited for the kinds of music that are going to come out of such a dark time, like what we all experienced. I just feel like there's going to be a lot more boundaries pushed, and it's going to just feel fresh. I was about to shit talk a genre, but I'm not going to, but
go for it.
I feel like you
can talk about tech house if you want to.
Okay. It's like, it's just, it all starts to sound the fucking same. And I just think, you know, things are changing. It just feels like things are changing. And the things that are cool aren't going to feel so monotonous, I think.
Yeah.
And so that's what is like really exciting for me, or what I'm looking forward to and excited about.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking
thank
the time
you.
Out.
This was just like a fun combo. Like, cool to talk.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like honestly, like the best part of my job, I mean, writing is hard. It's very hard, but like the best part of my job is this. Like,
yeah,
I get to talk to fucking awesome people all the time. Like who wouldn't want to get paid for that?
Dude, yeah. This was so nice. Thank you. Seriously.
Thank you. No, I had a great time. It was really great talking to you, and I'm so glad that I got to meet you.
Yeah, seriously.
And if you ever find yourself in San Francisco, let me know. I'd be happy to, like, you know, get you a beer and take you out to like show you a great place to eat and whatever. But like, yeah, definitely, like, let me know. But again, so awesome to meet you.
It was great meeting you too. I will take you up on that.
Yes, please. All right. Well, thank you again, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye.
All right. Bye.